Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy. Welcome to 4Player Podcast. This is our final E3 2017 podcast. My name is Nick Henderson. I am joined this evening by Brad Simons.
Yo.
Nolan Hedstrom.
Hey, everybody.
Christopher Guthridge.
Hey, what's up?
And Christopher Davis.
Howdy doody.
And as I mentioned before we started recording, we're going to be recording this at a breakneck pace. It's getting rather late, and we have a flight first thing in the morning, so...
Without further ado, let's get to my titillating challenge for Brad.
Oh, God, what?
I have a challenge, sir.
What are you doing?
Why'd you have to do this on the podcast?
I'm doing this on the podcast because I think it's great TV.
What is this?
So,
what is
Brad,
this?
Brad, you wanted this.
What are you... Are you going to...
see this?
Are you taunting me?
You wanted this Psychonauts...
rip its head off.
...action figure, if you will. The stuffed doll of a character
it's,
I don't
It's more of a
name,
large plush. His name is Rez.
I have a challenge for you.
Rez.
Oh, God.
Rasputin.
You may have this toy thing, whatever
plush.
It is.
It's a plush.
This plush. I can't thank you for
what is going on. What is he going to make me do? I want that bad.
You have to suck on one of these for 5 minutes.
Hold on, for those that don't know, Chris Davis is holding up his testicles.
You have two options. You can do A, this pickled barrel.
Oh, God. That's awful.
Or. You can do this Finny burger gum with ketchup-like liquid filled inside.
Oh, which one?
Choose your fate, sir. Oh,
what ketchup. Are these?
You're really going to give me that Psychonauts doll?
Yes.
I'll do them both.
Oh, oh do them both? Shit. 5 minutes straight.
5 minutes.
Oh, God.
Each?
No, I'll be fair. You can do it for 5 minutes
you
straight
have to
with
mix.
Both.
Do them both at the same time, right. Brad. Just get it over
Is it
with.
In his mouth yet?
Wait, both, that's what she
are
said.
Are they both hard candies? Like, the burger one's a chew, isn't it?
This
just,
is
you
a...
You smash that
this
one,
is a, this
that's
is
a gum. That's
burger
a...
gum with ketchup filling?
It's a gum? Oh, right.
Ketchup-like filling.
All right, I'm going to do the...
That's the best part.
I'm going to do the barrel for 5 minutes. Y'all talk about something I didn't play. And then I'll chew the gum.
I'm going to do the barrel for 5 minutes and try to throw up while y'all talk about something.
Oh, this is great.
All right, put it in. I mean, I'm sorry.
That's not what she said.
Welcome,
Brad, just stick out your tongue and take it.
E3 2017 is over. Brad's going to start eating this gross candy. He really wants this plush. And then, while he's doing that, we're gonna open with some other stuff. Who has something they want to open with today? Guys.
I want to talk
Bottoms
about Assassin's
up.
Creed real quick.
Okay.
Assassin's Creed Origin. This is going to be a less than 20-second conversation. I played
Go.
It. It's weird. They changed the control scheme. I agree with
does
you,
he,
Nick.
Does
it,
he have a thing?
He doesn't have a hidden blade
okay.
anymore.
He does not have a hidden blade.
It's not so much that he doesn't have a hidden blade. It's just they completely changed how the game works. He can climb on anything.
Oh, my God.
I still do not like Bayek as a character. I really hope that changes. The one cool thing I will say is it seems like you can take the bird and fly through almost the entire fucking map. Just on the bird zone. I tried
yeah.
to fly as
so
far as
no
I could.
Limit. Okay,
you know,
no...
it limited me because I got to the edge of where they will let you go in the demo. That was the limiting factor.
Sorry. Brad just blew his breath.
Brad blew some... Is the burger
breath?
One? Pickle or burger?
This is, I'm sucking on the pickle.
He's sucking... Brad's sucking on the pickle. And he blew some of his pickle breath at Nick. And that is it.
Why is putting food into a hard candy the grossest thing ever?
That's it for Assassin's Creed for me.
Real quick.
Y'all think if they fix the control scheme, this will be a good Assassin's Creed game?
I don't think they're going to fix the control scheme. I think this is how the new control scheme is. And that is basically because in previous Assassin's Creed games, any kind of attack was based on X. That's how you did your assassinations. That's how you switched to a weapon and did
was
it.
Was it X or square?
Depends on the console.
Yeah.
It was left on the face buttons. Yeah. The problem now is, since the combat has changed and become more of a Soulsian combat, the attack is on the trigger. And so I think that's one of the things that throws you off.
Yeah, so I just feel like 10 minutes wasn't necessarily enough to like
oh, hell no.
get the hang of that new control scheme.
Otherwise, I'm still
pretty excited. That's one comment I will make about essentially every Ubisoft game I played. They had horrible demos. They just did not the games are difficult to demo in a 10-minute or 15-minute chunk, and they just did not do a very good job of showing off their game.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next, what do we have?
I can talk about Call of Duty because that was the first thing I saw today.
All right,
30 seconds.
Call of Duty World War II. It's a video game. They they were playing the multiplayer segment, so I decided to play a multiplayer match. Because that's what I had. That pickle smells terrible. They showed us a match. We played a match and a half. One was Standard Deathmatch on Point de Hoc, which was one of the famous single-player levels from Call of Duty 2. It looked nothing like that actual level, but whatever. And the other was a new map, or I don't know where it was, on the new mode War, in which is a series of progressive objectives that you have to do in order to defeat the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
First one you do is you get into a building, you defend it for a while, try to steal secret plans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just capture and hold.
Okay.
Next one, and we didn't get past this, was you had to go...
Chris Davis, this is much farther, much longer than 30 seconds.
And you go to the bridge, and it's a fucking death trap, and you can't complete it, and the match ends, and they don't even let you switch sides, and it's over, and that's Call of Duty.
Cool.
All right.
Is anybody keeping time?
The only thing I have to complain about
this is... It's been 10 seconds.
It's using the points for kills and actions thing that's been prevalent in most of the race in Call of Duty.
So was there anything?
It's not like 3 kills, 5 kills, 7 kills for power ups and things like that.
Was there anything distinctive about this game that separates it from the previous ones?
This one's in World War II.
It's in World War
II. Other than that,
let's move on.
The fact that it's World War II, no.
Okay. All right. First game I want to talk about today. Sorry. Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's going to move at a breakneck pace. All right. First game I want to talk about, I think all of us.
Jesus Christ.
Good Lord.
No.
All right. First game I want to talk about today is a game actually most of us, with the exception of Chris Davis, actually played today. It was Fortnite.
Yep.
I played that. Is anybody in chat keeping time?
One more minute and
actually, I'm keeping time. It's been about 6 minutes. Seven minutes.
When did I pop it in, though? When we
about
started?
2 minutes.
That's what she said.
Okay.
So give it till about 8. Right.
What? Okay. What's next? Fortnite.
All right. Fortnite. The new game from Epic Games.
This one's been in development for quite a while.
I'm not sure. Somebody said that maybe this was being developed by People Can Fly and it's being published by Epic. I'm not entirely sure.
You keep talking and I will see if I can figure that out.
Yeah, you figure that out. But Fortnite is
By the way, I'm super fucking excited for this game now.
Yeah, it's really fucking
It's surprising
cool.
to me that Nick is super excited for a tower defense game.
I know, right?
A multiplayer.
Yeah, a multiplayer tower defense game.
Tower defense game, but like it feels
Is it Armature?
What? I don't think that's right.
Armature's working on Fortnite. That can't be right.
Hold on. Confirm that.
People Can Fly.
It is
developed by People Can Fly. Published by Epic Games.
Okay. Cool. There you go. I knew that. This is essentially, like, at its core, it is a tower defense game, which I'm not really, like, a big fan of tower defense, but it's everything around that. It's the way they take tower defense and just blow it up to 11 that is really, really fucking cool. So, we all played the tutorial mission, right?
Yep.
Which saw one of the hero characters, Ramirez, falling back to a base that was already kind of built for you and then surviving a couple waves, and then they introduce you.
Just to kind of give you the hang of it.
Yeah, just to show you like how you... Oh my God, Brad.
It looks like a little hamburger.
It's shaped like a little hamburger.
It looks like a little hamburger.
5 minutes. I'm going to start at 9 minutes. Go ahead, continue.
Okay, so we all played the quick little tutorial mission.
Wait.
I don't even know what the fuck to say about this game because it's just... There's so much going on and there's so much like control wise going on.
I can tell you real quick where I just one thing I would like to say about it before we get too much into like the mechanics of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, ignore me. Sorry, this is awful.
Oh my God. All
right. Anyways, I'm sorry.
I take the pickle for another 5 minutes. Over there.
Yeah, take the pickle, Brad.
You like the pickle.
Oh my God. Anyways. What I was trying to say was one thing I wanted to kind of get out of the way about Fortnite is right up front, even playing through the tutorial mission was, holy God, I love the personality this game has.
I think what you like best about the game is what the persona of the game, the characters,
the characters,
the humor behind it, how the gameplay goes, how it's not just a tower defense like Plants vs. Zombies where you're just kind of a generic, waves of enemies. More of a, you have a certain thing, a base in a certain area, and in some cases a town, like literally a town, and there are homes in the town, and you have to set up defenses around a position to defend against an incoming wave of enemies.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a lot more, the aesthetic is there, the appeal of the characters and the design.
At a very base level, I really like the visual style of the game and just kind of the animation style and running around and like using your pickaxe to like harvest material resources that you will then use to build your base and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think all of that stuff is super well done. Although I had to leave before so
it sounds to me like you guys probably played about like 30 minutes or so, right?
Did you all do any of the co-op like together?
I did.
Okay.
I didn't do it with Brad, with Brad or Nick. But I
literally just got through the tutorial pretty much.
Basically what happened was Nick and I went early in the day and we played the tutorial mission separately. And then Nick had to leave for another appointment and I was like, fuck that, I'm going to stay and play by myself. And one of the devs on the game, actually, I cannot remember her name to save my life, but she played with me and we actually... she logged us into like higher level accounts, like accounts that had been like had about like 60 hours into them.
Yeah.
So we played like high level mission together, and that shit got insane. It basically so the structure of the game is you might remember from the announcement trailer, from like the kind of overview trailer for the game. There was one part where they show this big map that has all these icons on it. That is kind of like your main mission select screen. That whole world is there in the game, but it's not like one giant persistent open world. It's sectioned off into areas, but each one of those areas represents a section of that map. So if you took each one of those game areas and like kind of stitched them together, it would be that actual map that you're seeing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But this one particular mission we played, we had to activate this thing called like an atlas or something like that. And there were basically... there were three different areas on the map where we could do that. So we got to select where we wanted to do that. We spent a little while just running around the map, harvesting resources, killing zombies. Basically, everything in the game, with the exception of maybe a few walls, is destructible.
Yeah,
if you see a fence, if you see a car...
Me and Nolan spent... quite a bit of time running around, breaking up houses.
In the mission we had, it was literally there was a position in the middle of this town, near a playground, that you had to set up defenses around it. There was just an empty field, and so we kind of made a little building around it with some walls and floor, and then we needed more supplies, so we literally started running around the town, breaking down cars, swing sets, trees, breaking into people's houses and ransacking their houses.
I was playing
I have no idea.
I picked an outlander, which are very good at scavenging, and they also have a couple of special abilities like they can collect these things in the environment called llama fragments, and when they get those they can summon a giant
llama?
Robotic llama pinata. And then your teammates can all wail on this thing, and it just generates a shit ton of resources when you do that.
Yeah.
And I also got another thing that's—I don't remember exactly. I think it's like Bear Sentry or whatever. But they showed it in the trailer as well. It's a robotic bear with like miniguns on it that you can set up, and for a limited amount of time, it deals massive damage, like attacking enemies. And it says things like "I was once a bear." it's fucking ridiculous. But we were running around this area collecting resources, killing zombies. All these little optional objectives kept popping up. It's like, oh, go. It's kind of like if you've ever played like Diablo 3, there will be challenge chests or like curse chests, things like that, where basically it's an item you interact with. It says, okay, we're going to throw a few really high level enemies at you. If you kill them, we'll give you some prizes, you know? So we did a few things like that. We got some high level loot, some crafting materials. And then we found one of the objective areas. We set that up, and then we had to collect a certain type of resource called blue goo, I think it's called.
Yeah, blue goo.
Yeah, blue goo. And what is my mic not working?
No, just get closer.
But But oh Jesus. So we went out, we found the blue goo, and basically what they let you do is they give you as pretty much as much time as you want to build a base, to set up defenses and get ready for however many waves
of enemies coming in.
Yeah, however many it's going to be for that particular mission. So we started building our base, and like so this is where I was like, what?
I'm watching. He's full of shit.
Okay.
No, it's fine.
This was where I was
Dude, I've restarted this timer like 4 times. I'm fairly certain it's past 5 minutes.
I see you completed the challenge, Brad. Congratulations.
Hold on.
You are one psychonaut richer.
Oh god.
Thank you, Chris Davis. I told you I didn't want to do these challenges. But you're
probably way too far from the mic, Brad.
You win. I'm sorry, Crispy, for this happening while you're talking about Fortnite. Cool. I know you're very excited.
That's cool.
Oh, huh?
No, this is a big important
thing. Why don't you embrace happening. Your plushie?
Yes.
You won.
You won the plushie, Brad.
Somehow you got it all, and all you had to do was...
Thank you, Chris.
Sacrifice your dignity.
Yeah.
Hey!
Andrew Chase Potts.
Quick question. Is this why you had me distract him?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my nose hurts.
So
he's going to sleep with that tonight.
So we were setting up our base, and this is where like the really cool part about Fortnite comes in. You have a lot of freedom to build like to build whatever you want.
I would think of it like something like, you know, a Rust or any kind of like what are those game types of game called?
Yeah, where like you're survival, like, crafting,
survival
game.
Crafting games where you literally just have a set number of supplies you have, and you can craft anything. You can craft walls. You know, floors, roofs, you know, half walls, fences, doors, and you can craft them out of different materials. You know, wood, brick, stone, wood, like brick and like iron, I guess, or steel or whatever.
Metal.
Yeah. So it literally, think of something like you know, like a Rust type game. I think that's a really very good example.
It is very similar to Rust, but the building portion of it is actually extremely intuitive and easy to use. Once you get into it, you're just like running around, click, 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 and everything's building on its own. What if you like lay down a staircase, it starts building, but you can still use the staircase immediately, like that kind of stuff. It's surprisingly easy to get things going. Like, in fact, I was still kind of getting the hang of the UI and like using the crafting tool, and I was setting up like small little perimeter walls around the area that we were going to be defending. And I set down like 2, maybe 3 walls, and I turn around, and this lady I'd been playing with had already built like fucking Fort Knox. It was ridiculous. like in about 30 seconds, she had thrown up a fort that had 2 levels to it and a sniper's nest on top of it. And,
son of a bitch.
Yeah, and it was just like, what the fuck?
She was the developer, though.
She was a developer. She
Crispy, did you think her job is to like throw up the dopest shit as fast as humanly possible?
I don't know.
To show you the potential.
I think it's just once you put a few hours into this game, like you're just really good at doing that.
I'll say I was.
It's not that difficult to do, and even like I played for an hour, and in that time, like my ability to navigate that UI improved considerably.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll say I was definitely kind of fumbling around with it.
Yeah,
I think it was because I was switching between controller and mouse and keyboard. Yeah. I was using mouse and keyboard for combat, and controller for like building stuff.
And you got a third person building.
I was using the controller for almost everything, except for the point where it asked me to enter my team name or my fort name.
I was like,
how do you do this with a controller? Oh, I have a keyboard.
I definitely believe there's a lot of potential in this game,
dude.
But I feel like the session I had with Nolan was really awkward because we spent so much of our materials building a base, and then we had no materials to build traps.
Yeah.
So we were like kind of scrambling to get materials, and then we built a few traps, and we kind of spent the rest of the wave just shooting zombies in the head.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the scenarios where the more you play it, the more efficient you'll be at managing
that
kind
of
stuff.
A lot of resources that you use in the game, it seems to me, I'm not 100% sure about this, but it seems to me carry over with specific characters. So, like, when we loaded in this high-level mission, like, our characters had, you know, hundreds of wood and metal. Like, we had basically everything we needed, and we were also, I was a high level Outlander, so when I was harvesting materials, I was getting a lot of materials to do that, you know. So so a lot of that kind of like looped back in on itself. Learning, I think learning how to manage those resources, especially at low levels, is kind of maybe part of the learning curve to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But man, like once we got going, it was so fucking fun and frenetic and just crazy, and in the way that like. The way that you would flow from like clearing out a section of zombies attacking like this corner of your base to repairing walls to adding new defenses to upgrading the things that are already built, like it was super snappy, and I was just running around doing this. There was no cumbrance whatsoever. Switching between combat and building and like editing base structures was super super intuitive. Like it wasn't a slog to go like repair. Like you could do your repairs on the fly, basically. You know, you didn't have to wait for like a lull in the combat to reinforce a wall or something like that, because they don't make you sit there and wait. They don't make you like fill up a bar to finish constructing something. You know what I mean? So oh my god. So the action just kept pushing like really 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 well. We had access to a lot of different traps that you guys probably didn't have access to, including ones that were called defender traps, that it was basically a pad that you could lay down that you could use to summon NPC defenders to help you out. And then you would equip them with like weapons from your inventory, and they would help you defend the base, and those defenders were actually pretty good at what they were doing. Like we set up a sniper tower and we put a sniper up there, and she was
taking dudes out left and right.
Now there was a shit ton of zombies because we were playing high levels, and they were throwing all sorts of different types of monsters at us, and they were coming in very very quick, unpredictable, erratic patterns, and the flow of combat and the flow of building would shift dramatically from like defending the northwest corner to defending the southeast corner, you know, to shoring up the eastern wall. Oh no, they got up our stairs. Now we have to fortify the stairs and put traps at the top and bottom of that, build walls like this. But the really smart thing about building here isn't that like when you open like a menu to build a wall, it's not like a lot of crafting games where there's just like six different walls you can pick.
Yeah.
It's just wall. And then
you pick the material.
You pick one button to cycle through material, wood, brick, or metal.
Yeah.
And then there's an editor that basically takes any panel of a structure that you're building and breaks it into grids, and you just click what you want on and off. So if you click out two panels in the center that in the shape of a door, it automatically builds a door that you can use. If you click out a panel in the center to use as like a window, it automatically builds a window for you.
Yeah.
And you can do that while you're building the structure, or you can do that after the structure's already been built. All you have to do is just, I was playing keyboard and mouse, all you have to do is hit the G button to open the editor and just click, 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 hit G to confirm, and it makes the changes instantly for you. But switching between like low walls to block zombies, to high walls, to create fort structures, to putting doors in this wall, to putting windows in that, like it was all just like, it was all there.
Let me ask you this.
It felt super
snappy. Do you feel like there will be a metagame where people will kind of figure out the most efficient way to handle the zombies, and then you just do that?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
You mean from one mission to the next?
I mean, like, just in general.
Because the thing is, there were a lot of different there were a lot of different mission types. So the one I was playing happened to be a pretty basic, like, defend this structure from waves of zombies. But there were other ones that required more mobility, that required more, like, moving around a map to achieve different objectives. And maybe your building, your fort building would be much more condensed and kind of on the fly than it is, like fortifying one single location.
Yeah.
I don't know how many different mission modes there are in this game. It looked like there were a lot. And I'm sure they're all going to have their own kind of metas and strategies to them. But, I mean, here's the thing, man. This game has been in development for, like, 6 years now. 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, I feel like they've had enough time to really work out how to take these really cool mechanics and turn it into a full, like, game experience. This Someone in chat had mentioned, like, oh, this kind of sounds like Metal Gear Survive. The thing I will say about this, the major difference I can see between this and Metal Gear Survive is, in Metal Gear Survive, a lot of what you were crafting and building were specific traps or barricades, but you were generally focused on pre-existing structures and just fortifying those structures. Fortnite was really all about getting to an area, wiping the slate clean, and building everything from the ground up exactly how you want it to be. And the amount of variety of how these things like snap together and how these different pieces can be placed makes the possibility seem, I don't know about endless, but incredibly, incredibly varied.
I am like curious to see the effectiveness of an actual structure.
What this
I mean, because
like
the thing you're defending is always ground level,
like,
right?
Huh?
The thing you're defending is always ground level.
I don't know. So I only did two and both of them were ground level. But I don't know. Beyond that.
Well, I mean, it comes out soon.
They're going into a beta in about a month, it seems like.
July 25th.
It's going to be kind of like an early access thing. And I think they're looking to go 1.0 sometime early next year. But after what I played today, after seeing what this game could be, like after playing with an experienced player, I am sure shit can be playing.
I can't even believe I walked out of this with as impressed as I was. I don't even have a PC right now that's like optimal for playing this kind of thing, and I'm like totally fucking ready. Hey. I don't even know why, but it spoke to me.
You know what I'm so ready good. For? Life is strange before the storm.
Yeah, it is strange before the storm.
Yeah.
So, what a transition that was.
So this should be interesting. I kind of liked Life is Strange. This guy had his game of the year. This guy never
was that your
really
game of the fucking year?
Yes.
Played it. So
I liked it.
Let me ask y'all, what did y'all think of Life is Strange Before the Storm, which is the prequel where you play as Chloe. There is no time mechanics.
You're just playing
an adventure game as Chloe.
How is it playing as Chloe?
What'd y'all think?
Not voiced by
Ashley Burch.
That's one of my main reservations about the game at this point.
It didn't sound as good.
I think it was pretty interesting when Chloe got upset because a guy wanted $20 for a t-shirt, which is apparently highway robbery. So she cut his brake lines to get a t-shirt.
She didn't cut the brake line. She just
released the parking brake
and the car rolled off and almost killed someone.
Released the Kraken.
Okay, so you're playing as Chloe and she is so angsty. It is so cornball.
Yeah.
But like,
she's 16 years old.
It's cornball, but like in the way that like Life is Strange. If you watch me stream that game, that first episode, I was just kind of making fun of it, like the whole thing, because everyone said and talked like angsty, lame ass teenagers. Yep. But by the end of it, like they really grew on me. And you know, I mean this is similarly effective, I think. And you kind of cringe. But then it's like, yeah, I guess that's how being a lame teenager kind of is. And it's kind of endearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, I just want to go thrash. And then she jumps in the mosh pit. And then she has an emotional, like, fight with her friend. And it's, I'm probably going to play this.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes that's just life, Brad. I was in a mosh pit 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know, Nick.
How old are you?
30. Go fuck yourself.
I don't know. It's more Life is Strange.
Yeah.
It had the rewind mechanic, which I kind of wish there was like a gimmick for Chloe in some way. Even if it's just like some artificial little bitty bullshit.
Yeah.
I kind of wish there was something.
I mean, I'm glad they at the very least didn't force it. Didn't like try to find a way to give her the rewind mechanic. Because that would have been really contrived.
I feel like the presentation they give wasn't actually a good representation of the game, because it was like one half of it was like a playable demo where she was taking audience votes on what to do for consequences and shit like that, and everybody was shouting like attack and you know
and
like
murder
and steal this shit, and I was like, oh god, people are killing me.
But somebody made a good point. He's like, well, because that's not how we're gonna play it when we play it.
I guess it's true, yeah. But the other half of the demo was this 10-minute kind of video presentation of scenes from later on in the game, which you're interacting with Rachel, who was one of the main objects of focus for the first game.
Yeah.
And
it's very This is very, very Twin Peaks. By the way, the name of the band was Firewalk. That she really wanted to go see.
It was Firewalk?
Yeah, it was Firewalk.
Okay, I didn't make the connection in my head at the time.
Yeah, this is very Twin Peaks. So, like her friend Rachel is like the really popular rich girl at school that everyone likes, yet she's hanging out with like some bad people doing some like bad things, and she's looking to Chloe because Chloe's supposed to be the bad kid, and it just seems very Laura Palmer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess I
get that reference. I started watching that show.
Oh, there you go.
I guess just this representation of Rachel that we were, you know, preached about throughout the entirety of Life is Strange. I mean, I guess it's just not what I figured the character would be.
Mm-hmm.
I just, for me, she doesn't feel written that well.
Rachel?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
We had 30 minutes with the game.
I just think that
the
presentation was misleading.
The writing overall is a little...
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was... For whatever reason, those characters grew on me in the first season, and I was stupidly happy to see Chloe again. I'm just lame.
I won't argue with you there.
I'm lame like the rest of us, I guess, who played Life is Strange. I don't know. She had that emotional fight with her friend, and
hey, I liked the original Life is Strange.
Did you play that?
Yeah, I fucking played that.
Well, I mean,
did you beat it though?
Yes.
Okay, just ask.
Oh, you did that at the end of the year.
You did.
I don't think that's true. You like did it at the very end of the year before awards.
I don't remember.
But did you like Life is Strange?
Yeah, well.
You gonna play this one? This is a three.
I consider putting it in my top 10.
It's a 3-episode prequel.
Yeah,
six to 9 hours.
You know what I really liked? You know what I really liked about Life is Strange 1 or the original? I like the soundtrack a lot. That whole game had a fantastic soundtrack. The whole angsty thing doesn't bother me all that much. There's a few cringy moments at the whole Final Fantasy Spirit to Them thing. Whatever.
You never let that
I feel like everybody goes through a period of their life like this. So like, and especially at that age, it's fairly common. So like, I don't understand why people like to harp on that game because it's kind of reminds them of that time in their life, I guess. I don't know, but like, tons of people go through that shit. So like, I don't know why people harp on it so much.
Sort of, but I definitely never talked like that when I was younger.
I didn't say you.
I was on the debate team.
You also weren't a 16-year-old girl.
Sure, but I was a 16-year-old male. I went through similar things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I'm a Barbie girl, man, in a Barbie world.
What else do we see today?
Fuck off.
I got my hands on Detroit Become Human.
Yeah, I always say Becoming Human, and I stop myself like, fuck.
Yeah.
Did you become human?
I did not.
Did you become an angry...
I became dead. Oh. That's a better word for it. Well, really? No, so,
were you even ever alive, though?
Ooh, that's deep. No, so I played Detroit Become Human. I got to play the demo that we originally saw from E3 last year, where you play as Connor, the hostage-negotiating robot android. Correct. Well, it ends on the roof. I will say that the demo or like, you know, the gameplay we saw last year does not do the game justice. As a, you know, hostage negotiating robot, when he shows up on the scene, the first thing that happens is, you know, the mom shows up and I think y'all remember, she's like, oh my God, you sent one of them. Why didn't you send a human? Blah, blah, blah. And he just kind of just looks at her. But then you kind of walk around the house and you gather clues as to what's going on. You know, you find out, oh, hey, you know, right before the robot murdered the dad had just ordered a new android. And, oh, maybe it's, you know, retribution and blah, blah, blah.
The android's jealous.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, you're going around the house gathering clues, and the whole time you're doing this, it shows a percentage meter that will go up. Like, every time you find more clues, it's like, oh, percentage of chance has increased to this much. And I didn't want to spend too long playing it. So when I hit like 80-something percent, I was like, 80%, you know, that's pretty fucking good. 80%, I'll take an 80%. So I go outside, and I start, you know, talking to the robot. And he's like, oh, you don't you come any closer. I'm crazy.
Was he crazy?
Maybe. And so, you know, you take the things you've learned. You know, you've learned that, oh, hey, you know, before this all happened, the robot really did like the family. But, you know, the dad did order a new robot, and this guy did start shooting people, and, like, he shot this cop. And, like, and so you start talking with the robot, and everything you say has an action. And that meter, that's, you know, the percentage chance of success goes up and down constantly. And yeah. it sucks because every time you say something, it's either going to go up or down. And you're like, you say something good, it's like 85. Yes. You say something bad, 70. Fuck. Like, it's like a huge dip in, like, you know, percentage chance success.
There's more of an immediate reaction or yeah. consequence to it.
And quickly before that, when I was doing the investigation of the house, I forgot. It goes into, like, a Batman Arkham... city?
Detective mode.
Arkham Origins detective mode, where you're like, hey, something happened here. And so it goes into this reconstruct mode. Yeah. And so you can reconstruct the scene. And so you can scrub through time, and time, you know, you see like maybe like a body being shot. And as you'll see certain points on this timeline that seem like different, it's like, you know, most of it's gray and there's like a little yellow spot. And so when you go into that yellow spot, you can literally turn the camera 360 degrees and you'll see something maybe in the world that is off, and you can press triangle on it and it'll be like, oh, there was actually, you know, a tablet, like the guy was holding a tablet. So then as you then it changes things. So when you scrub back and forth, he's not holding the tablet. Like things will literally change in this memory reconstruction. Yeah. And so, well, kind of like with the drone, but a little different. It's hard to explain without physically seeing it. But I really liked that. It was a really cool concept. And so, you know, on the roof, and I'm trying to do this hostage negotiation thing, and I see like a detective or like a cop, a first responder or something who's been shot. And so, you know, Connor, the robot, bends down. He's like, you know, he's bleeding out and he's gonna die. And you're like, I'm gonna apply a tourniquet. And you start to apply it, and like the other robot like shoots at you. He's like, don't you fucking do it. And then you can accept or you can refuse. Like you can keep doing it.
And then you have a fucking robot fight.
Yeah, no. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I'll let this human die so he doesn't like start shooting more.
You've had a moment of weakness, Nolan.
Well, that's the thing. But the thing is, my percentage chance of success went up. Because he asked me to do something for him and I listened, and there was a point where like the helicopters are going off and he's like, ah, these helicopters drive me crazy. And so like I'm like, okay, tell him to leave. And you know, Connor does this motion and the helicopters leave, and your percentage chance goes up again. And then I'm getting closer, and then it's like, hey, do you want to like, you know, sympathize with him or be aggressive? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be fucking aggressive or like whatever. And Connor, the negotiator, is like, you know what? You're a defective robot. This is wrong. Look at what you have done. You have hurt people. This is not what you were designed for. You were not designed to, you know, to harm humans. And he's like, what was I designed for? Blah, blah. And like the percentage chance goes down for like the fucking 60. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And then, you know, I'm getting closer, you know, as you're constantly talking with him. And then it popped up and it was... keep talking or try to convince him or sacrifice yourself. And I'm like, fuck.
What does that mean?
Okay, sacrifice first of all,
yourself? Well, that's the thing is you don't know.
Here's what I want to say.
In the trailer, I think they show what that looks like. And it looks something like you pushing him off the top of the building, like you grabbing him and jumping off the top of the building.
Right, that's right.
And both of you dying.
I say, I feel like if you were playing this game for real, for realsies, in your own game, you were probably far less likely to sacrifice yourself.
Yeah.
But since you were at E3,
but why?
Demo,
what if I didn't sacrifice myself and he kills the kid? That's the thing. You don't know.
Matter. Is that your game? Is that going
to
be the
playthrough? So, I decided to sacrifice myself.
Yes, as you should have.
Connor, slow motion, runs up, pushes the defective android, and turns around and grabs the girl. And he holds her as the android's falling and shoots Connor a shit ton in the back.
Oh,
and then falls off the building.
Girl.
And so the android is holding the girl and like on the building. So the android, the bad one's gone, good one's here. But the thing is, like, the girl starts freaking out because, like, Connor's now motionless holding her, like, bleeding blue blood onto her. And she's, like, freaking out. And, like, the cops walk up. And then it's, like, mission success. And then the android blinking light fades away. And so my mission succeeded, but I died in the process.
Damn.
And it's like, oh, shit. Would Connor have, like, could his story have kept going on?
I mean, like, if it was, like, Heavy Rain, then yeah, probably.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, my God. Like, dude, this game is looking like it's going to be pretty fucking good. And I know we mentioned it the other day on the podcast, but I just want to say it's fucking beautiful. Like, I am, like, still super impressed at how good the game looks.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that I think doesn't present as well as it is when you're actually playing.
Oh, no, totally.
But yeah.
Hmm.
I was watching a few people playing at Sony booth, and it looked pretty good.
Let's talk about Focus.
Yeah. So
we saw three games.
We collectively had a Focus Home Interactive meeting today. We got to see three games that they were showing off. I'll start with the first one, which is I think Nolan and Chris Davis did? Or no, Nolan and Crispy missed.
No, I didn't see Cthulhu.
Yeah, so missed it.
The first game. Why is my mic so low?
Call of Cthulhu.
The first game that we saw today at Focus Home Interactive was Call of Cthulhu. I don't think there's a subtitle. I think it's just called Call of Cthulhu.
I believe it's just called Call of Cthulhu.
It's called Call of Cthulhu, the official game.
Oh, well, yeah, it is called the official game.
Yeah, I saw a tweet saying, I don't think you could say that because it's public domain. There's no official Call of Cthulhu.
So no, I think they mean it's the official game based on the RPG Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, so that's one thing they kept emphasizing when they were presenting this game to us, is that they were basing this game off of the
White Wolf.
Yeah,
Call of Cthulhu.
Is that what they said?
Yeah, several times. Huh. It may have been hard to understand them, Brad, but yes.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean
who would have thought French people?
It's a French studio, so they had pretty thick French accents, so it was a little hard to understand, but you know, they did a good job. And they got really into the demonstration as well. A lot of people are very familiar with us. We played Call of Cthulhu, Dark Corners of the Earth.
Yup.
I don't know how similar this game is ultimately going to be to that game. But I do feel I am pretty interested in it after watching it. So you are a private investigator from Boston who goes to investigate this mansion where a fire broke out and ended up killing a family. You mostly go because the facts that you know and the police report, there are a lot of inconsistencies there. So you want to go find out once and for all what the real story is.
Okay.
So he shows up at the mansion. It is a first person game, so you're walking around freely. It's not, I was kind of worried this was going to be more like a point and click adventure kind of thing where you just kind of point where he goes and he goes and does it, but it is very much a first person game, just like Dark Corners of the Earth. You're moving around the environment just like that. And so the first thing that he did in the demo, which I think was really cool, is he was exploring around the exterior of the mansion. And he found this little cemetery or this little garden where there was like three gravestones, and there was one that belonged, I think, to the wife of the matriarch of the family that was killed in this fire.
Yeah.
And he notices there are flowers on that grave, and if you walk up and examine it, he makes note of the fact, okay, there are flowers on this grave but not the other ones. That tells me something, and it kind of files it away like in the back, you know, makes a note of it. So that it may come into play a little bit later.
The game really puts an emphasis on detective aspects and...
Chris, just go far from the mic.
Yeah, sorry. As you explore, the more things that you explore and you take note of, the more notes it's going to make. And that may actually ultimately end up opening new dialogue options for you later when you're talking to people and open new options for you in, you know, forks in the road, that kind of thing. So he eventually tries to get into the mansion and he comes across like the groundskeeper, who is like super pissed that you're trying to get into the house, but you use in that moment of like he attacks you with an axe and you like stop him, and then he tells him like you have a dialogue option of, I know you cared about the mother, I saw the flowers, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of what happened to her. And then he's like that makes sense, I'm gonna let you go ahead and explore the house.
The entire sequence kind of reminds me of a cross between Mass Effect dialogue trees and the Deus Ex Human Revolution negotiating scenes that you would do between characters.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit like that.
Yeah.
So he eventually gives him the key to go inside, and then they split the demo into two parts, and the first part was very much focused on detective work. So he goes into this room where the fire started, and he's able to explore, and he's looking for all kinds of clues that might have been missed by the police. And he ends up finding things like a burned shoe, a broken lamp, a broken bottle of alcohol.
It seems like it'd be frustrating finding all of that stuff because it seemed like you had to have found it all to proceed.
Well, I disagree.
It really just depends, because here's the thing. Like, you can proceed at any moment because ultimately you're trying to get to a point where you can make a deduction
found the last thing, it said, okay, I found everything.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he said, this room is clear.
Yeah. I mean, these detective scenes are a lot like Murdered Soul Suspect, where you go into a scene, you evaluate all the clues, it tells you when you completed it, and then you do a deduction on what you think happened at the scene.
Yeah. So they weren't really clear as to whether or not you had to find all of them to actually proceed. or if it was just ideal if you did. But in this case, in the demo, they found all the clues in the room, and then you had to kind of, like, the one clue they pointed out was you noticed the clock, and the clock time was frozen at 10 p.m. And at the end, you review the police report, and you look at all the different clues you found, and you see what do you think contradicts this scenario. And in this case, the 911 call came in at, like, after midnight. So you're like, okay, that's weird. Something must have happened. And it must have, there's, for whatever reason, they delayed calling the police. And that kind of leads you to make a deduction and figure and move on to progress through the story.
Hey, Nick.
Now, I have a feeling you could do that even if you had not found everything, but you may not have been able to come to the correct conclusion.
But then what would have happened?
I don't know.
See, maybe you have less information.
I think that's one byproduct, of, like one negative consequence of having them play through the demo, quote unquote, perfectly.
Let me ask you something. In the interest of time,
yeah.
What did you think about this overall?
I think it has a. It reminded atmospherically. It reminded me of Dark Corners of the Earth. They jumped ahead a little bit and had a scenario where there was an enemy. Like, he went into a room and there was this creepy painting.
Kind of a hide from it sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's like this fucking monster, creepy ass looking monster, comes crawling out of this painting. And ultimately what they ended up suggesting is that in the demo he ran around trying to hide in the dark from this thing. And they introduced this idea of having phobias. And in this particular case, the character had a phobia of he was claustrophobic. So he's running around in this dark space trying to get away from this monster. He ends up hiding in like a coat closet.
Are you sure he doesn't have a phobia of monsters?
Well, there's that. But he hid in a closet. He's claustrophobic, and the longer he stayed in the closet, you can feel his heart beating faster and faster. And if you wait too long in the closet because of his phobia, his heart will beat too fast, and then he might have a heart attack. So
or worse.
So it's kind of encourages you to like pay attention to those phobias, and it basically prevents the player from just hiding in the closet until they're.
This game kind of reminded me of Amnesia.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Yeah.
And the demo, he ended up running up to the painting and deciding, like, oh, I can take this dagger that I found in this art display and, like, stab the painting and see if that kills it, but it didn't work, and the monster fucking killed him. And he's like, if you had explored more and maybe read more notes and found more clues, you may have actually had the information you needed to kill that thing. But because I didn't explore enough, I didn't, and I ended up dying.
Yeah, they really emphasize, you know, exploring the environment and learning everything you can before proceeding. And it ties into the RPG, like, social and deduction skill set.
Yeah, there's like meters.
But they also kind of want you to balance out what you're doing. Because if you become too knowledgeable in certain aspects, you'll begin to notice more of the horrors of the world, and you might go insane.
Yeah,
or develop new phobias.
They didn't go into too much detail about the insanity effects, but they implied that they were there. So
that's what I think the phobias are tied.
You don't call a game Call of Cthulhu without insanity effects.
Okay, yeah, no. Okay, let me ask you.
Go ahead.
What's up? Are you interested enough in playing this game?
I am, and I'm a little hesitant. And I think you know why, because the studio is Cyanide Studios. They don't have a great track record.
Yeah.
But atmospherically, I think this game, on the surface, based on what I've seen, is pretty effective.
What else to focus at?
The other game, and actually this is surprising, because this is actually one game I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, neither did I.
The reason you didn't know it existed was because they just announced it 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I was talking with Jessica while y'all were in there getting information on it. She was saying, yeah, they literally just publicly announced this game 2 days ago.
So this developer, I bet if I went back, is more or less like a porthouse. They don't do a lot of their own games. I forget the name of the last MOBO.
Strangely enough, they have three games right now, and it's
no. I'm saying the actual developer of this game.
Yeah. So, and I bet if I went back and looked at the original email for the deployment, it would say there was an unannounced title, and this was probably it.
No. Yeah.
But the game is called A Plague's Tale or Plague Tale. I can't remember.
A Plague Tale Innocence.
It was originally just called Plague Tale, and I think they've recently rebranded it.
A Plague Tale Innocence. And this game is actually, of all the games that I saw, I think this is actually the one I'm most interested in, which is strange.
Yeah, it seemed kind of cool.
It seemed really cool. It's also kind of a traditional game in terms of, like, it seems like it's going to be a very linear experience. We asked them a whole bunch of questions at the end, and it seems like it's going to be a very linear kind of horror-esque experience, very atmospheric. He said it's going to be about 9 to 10 hour game, but essentially it's built around this. It's based. You play as this young girl and her younger brother, who she's trying to protect, living in like medieval times during the
14th century during the plague.
Yeah, 14th century during France. The plague. Yeah, 14th century France during the plague. So you're trying to protect your brother, but in the midst of this plague, the Inquisition is out. There's two main enemies in the game: the Inquisition and rats, fucking hordes and hordes of rats.
Like, it's covering the floors.
They don't like light. So like kind of the main, just the baseline mechanic of the game is you navigate the environment and you solve puzzles and you get around these rats by using light to scare them away.
And fire.
Imagine like the Gears of War 1 with the krill. You know, when it's nighttime and you know you got to stay in the light. That's basically this kind of turned into a rat.
It's been a long time since I played that game, but. Yeah. But yeah, it was cool because they showed several scenarios where they're trying to avoid the Inquisition, they're trying to solve puzzles, they're trying to and whatnot while all trying to avoid these rats. And the game actually looks really nice. I'm surprised. Like I think it actually presented pretty well.
Yeah.
But some of the cool things they did, like there was these two Inquisition soldiers that were looking around trying to find any intruders or whatnot. They were holding lanterns that were scaring the rats away.
And it's not just some rats. It's like thousands
of rats. So like. The young girl, who's the character you actually control, has like a slingshot or like a sling. So she swings like a rock around and slings it at him and like knocks the lamp out of his hand, which shatters on the ground and puts the light out. And then all of a sudden he just gets swarmed by rats and eaten. Wow. It also showed her exploring like a church area and there were rats in there. And you had to find a way to, there was a lamp that was kind of in this alcove and she had to get to the alcove to get the lamp. But she didn't have a light source, so she had to like wander over to a different part of the room and find a way to knock down this lantern off the ceiling, and then carry that over and light another torch, and then use that to get over to the lamp and that kind of thing. So beyond that, like it was kind of a short demo that kind of showed just the general mechanics of how that stuff's going to work. But atmospherically, it reminded me a lot of Amnesia, and that's pretty cool. It also seemed like I could be wrong. I didn't really want to ask this. Asked them outright because I knew the answer was going to be we can't tell you, but like it seemed to me like they were straying a little bit away from like the supernatural element, and they were just going for a straight up like this is a period piece about a sister, a young girl trying to protect her brother in a time of great stress, and it has to do with the plague and the rats and the Inquisition.
I would disagree based on how they ended the demo, because they go into this church and they're eventually able to get past like this gigantic horde of rats, and they go into the tunnels, and it's just covered the tunnels are just like covered in bones and sinew. It's disgusting.
The rats will burn.
And they hear their mother calling out to them in the tunnel.
Yeah, I think it's good, but I think that's going to ultimately end up being more of a psychological thing and less about like it's not going to be like a ghost.
Well, see, but like remember
why would they both hear it?
No, it's a psychological thing. They didn't both hear it.
I don't think they both heard it.
You
play the girl, and you hear the mother go, "Come to me, children," blah, blah, and then the kid goes, "Mama," and like takes off down the fucking hall.
Yeah,
there's definitely some fucking magic going on.
And the girl is calling out after, saying, "No, that's not mom. Stop, Hugo. Stop."
Not to mention, the fucking main institution in the game is like the Inquisition, and this game they made an emphasis that this game is not historically accurate at all. Yeah. So like. It's gonna be fucking demons or something.
We'll see. I mean, but to be honest,
what did you think about it? I didn't even know you saw it.
I did see it. I don't know. Like, it's a stealth game. I don't know. Like, I wasn't that impressed. Is it like a 10 hour?
It's 10 hours.
Story based.
About a 9 to 10 hour linear story based horror game.
Yeah, I don't know.
What if it does some interesting stuff with the story?
But like, I'm hoping it does some interesting stuff with the story. I'm hoping it does some interesting like it's a very different thing to be scared of than what we're used to in a horror game, and I think that's kind of cool.
Until it's not.
But you know, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt until I see otherwise. Yeah. Of the three games they showed, that was the thing that looked the most fresh, and I'm the most excited about it.
Yeah.
The other game we saw is of course the game from Don't Nod Entertainment. Of course, the guys who did Life is Strange, they're working on a game called Vampire.
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 And it couldn't be any more different. Bach. Because holy crap.
That is, yeah, it's quite different than Life is Strange. Who, would someone else like to take the reins on talking about Vampire?
It is a...
I got some notes.
I got some notes as well. So, Vampire, you know, third person action game.
And I mean, it's an RPG.
Oh, it's an RPG, and it takes place in 1918 London. You play a physician or a doctor who has been turned into a vampire, which kind of adds to the story element of the game, and that, you know, you've taken a physician's oath that you will do all you can to, you know, save people from dying, but at the same time, you need to kill people to live, or I guess at least feed on them, so you're harming people. The weird thing is you still work in a hospital. You know, the guy who runs this hospital is cool with that. He knows you're a vampire, but he also knows you're a doctor.
I think one thing that's cool about this, I guess, is that, you know, there's a lot of different interpretations of vampires and how they work and whatnot, but, like, this is very much a, like they imply that being a vampire doesn't necessarily mean, like, a lack of conscience.
Yeah.
Or a lack of soul.
Correct.
Which I think is a very common thing, like, in a lot of things.
So,
like,
hold on.
If you become a vampire,
there
you
are kind
lose
of,
that sense of humanity.
I don't know how far to go, but there are kind of vampires in this universe that I don't want to say have a lack of soul. The Skulls,
yeah,
they had mentioned, are the vampires who have been, you know, feeding on, you know, disease-ridden people and plagued and whatever, and they're kind of a little more monstrous. But, you know, this, what we saw at first did not have me super excited until we got later into the demo when they started showing the world. The world is apparently what makes this game crazy, and it's because every single person in the world, every NPC has a story, has a name, has a history, has friends, has family, that if you were, when you interact with them, you learn more about the people around them. And there's literally in the menu, you can find, hey, in this section of the game, this is all the people who live there. And there will be a bunch of blanks because you just don't know of those people yet, but there will be people who you know. And, you know, an example was they talked to this one old lady, and, you know, she had a son, and her son was kind of a dick, and she was looking after this kind of orphan boy who lived on the street and whatever. And so when you look at these people, you can see, you know, you can learn information about them. You can learn, you know, their personal, like, feelings towards other characters in this world, the quality of their blood, and because the weird
thing—that's a meter. That's a thing. There's
a meter, and so that's another thing in this game that similar to something like The Witcher 3. Attacking and enemies and going into combat is not how you gain experience in this game. I think you get a little bit, but it's not a lot. The main way you gain experience and level up in this game is by feeding on people. So you kind of have to feed on people. Yeah. You can't really get around that. And so, you know, the way they were describing it, you could literally probably kill every single NPC in this game. And the problem is, you would just be ending quest line after quest line after quest line, or kind
the
of messing
be
it up.
Empty.
It's not empty.
Just that the world gets populated by these, like, monsters.
Yeah.
If you start killing.
Well, yeah, with
and
the,
it makes
the
game harder.
The lack of people in the world, the lack of, you know, good citizens in this place, will cause, you know, the more evil creatures to start.
The creatures
seeking
of the night.
The Skull is what they call them.
My notes for this game say, London, Spanish flu, physician vampire, weird faces / fuckboy hipsters, detective mode, blood equals level up, glitchy trench coat.
Yes.
Man, I need to learn how to take notes like you.
A
damn
lot of that is very true.
Glitchy trench coat.
Dude,
you didn't see that.
Yeah,
there was one point where he's like, the bottom of his trench coat looked
like
he was, like, becoming one with his ass.
It was like tessellating, like,
yeah,
to infinity.
I mean, there were some kind of cool things we saw. Like, he came across this one guy who was, he's like, oh, woman, stand back. I'm a vampire hunter, and this man has been attacked by a vampire, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And then, like, you know, he's clearly not a vampire hunter because there's a vampire standing in front of him, and he doesn't even realize it. And it kind of gets to one of those points where if I was playing this game, I would totally just eat that guy. Just, like, fuck
See,
this guy.
Like, they're trying to, like, but, like, that's because you have no soul.
Well, and, so that's the thing. And
he's
so,
probably a really nice dude. He's just
and that is kind of what they try and get you to think about in this game, is don't just take everything at face value, first of all. Talk to the people. And so at one point they come across this guy, Seymour, and it looks like he's trying to break into a house. And you start talking to him, and this guy's a total fucking tool bag. And you start talking to him more, and he starts talking about how, oh,
you know, he had gotten this locket for his mother and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, if I would have just eaten this guy, I'd feel like a dickhole. Like, this guy's actually kind of cool. And he lost the locket he bought for his mom. And so, you know, you go to find it. And it turns out that he lost it because he had killed a bunch of guys and it dropped it when he killed them. And he actually is a fucking asshole. Yeah, he actually is a fucking asshole. And it's like, well, son of a bitch, maybe I will kill him. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like you can't take everything at face value because, you know, some people might be better than others. But the thing was Seymour had a cold. And so his blood actually was not as good and pure as some other of the people. So if I think they were saying you could maybe wait a little while and that might go away or, yeah. You know, and it's kind of one of those things where it's like the more you know about a person, the more you get out of them.
The fucking people demoing this game went through this whole line where you meet the guy, you find out he's a murderer, you follow him back to his home, you meet his mother, and then his mother talks about this other homeless person that they
took in, the orphan.
That they took in trying to help him. And of the three people that are part of this quest line, fucking killed and ate the mother.
She had the best blood. Her blood was the purest, the highest quality. It got the most experience.
They needed to level up.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Blood.
To go do some somewhat suspect.
I was disgusted.
Yeah.
That's how he gets all his fuckboy powers.
Exactly.
Hashtag that blood.
The combat was a little weird. I didn't have and I don't want to say the guy's accent was making me have trouble understanding what he was talking about, but he had a fairly fucking thick accent.
I know what you're saying.
And so, like, multiple times he would say something and, what? Excuse me, what? And also, it was like 95 degrees in the room we were in.
Oh my god.
God, that was so bad.
It was ridiculous. But yeah, and so like a couple of things, you know, stereotypical vampires, you can't just enter a home in this game, you need to be invited in.
Yeah.
But you can also, like, I think the term was mesmerize people.
Mesmerize
and them. So people had a number of which they were, you know, susceptible to mesmerizing.
Oh, I will let you in.
Yeah. And the more you know about people, you can unlock optional dialogue that might make things easier on you. There were some like kind of blue dialogue options that were unlocked because you knew some information. Another thing is you can only level up in this game when you rest. You have to go back to a safe place and rest. But the thing is, every time you do that, all of the things you have done in the world, they have consequences, and those consequences kind of like come into play when you're resting.
Yeah.
You know, the world will literally change. And like Nick was saying, he chose to kill the old lady. So when he does that, now, you know, Seymour has taken over his mother's house, and her house has actually kind of gone into disarray because she's gone.
Like
it's
like the next night, and you go back to her house, and suddenly, like, the environment they had created is totally different. Like, everything's trashed, there's shit all over the floor, the door's wide open.
Mm-hmm.
It's been clearly abandoned. And then you meet the son, who you chose not to kill, and his dialogue, his worldview has kind of changed now that you've killed his mother. And that kind of thing, which seemed really cool.
We didn't see too much combat. There is an element of stealth of this game. I think Shadow Veil was the ability he used, where he could almost turn invisible to kind of sneak around the environment. You can kind of turn into like a mist. There's this
or the predator.
You can petrify your opponent's blood. I think was one of the abilities
it literally makes it so they can't.
Their blood freezes up for a few seconds, so they literally just stand there like.
What I didn't get was in the middle of the combat, he activated a move that attacked everybody in the environment just instantly killed him.
So apparently he has some super ability, and if you had noticed when he used that, there was like a 10-minute cooldown on it. Like it literally said 599, like, or 559 or whatever, 558. It started cooling down.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. I think it was 10 minutes. Or yeah, so it was 600 seconds or whatever the fuck, I don't care. It was a long time. He might have mentioned what that ability was, but I just didn't hear him. There's skill trees in this game. It seems pretty in depth. The thing that surprises me the most is this game is supposed to come out this November.
Yep.
And it seems a little rough around the edges. Like, they got a little bit of work to do on it.
I mean, let's be honest here. This is Don't Nod, and while people liked Life is Strange, their last big game before that
was
Remember Me.
Yeah.
Which. But I mean, the combat in this game seems kind of mediocre, to be honest.
Yep.
But
at least there's a stamina bar. I mean that helps.
And that's
time,
true.
They're kind of de-emphasizing combat.
There's a health bar, a stamina bar, and a blood bar. And the blood bar is what you use for using those special abilities.
I think it is cool that they made it so that because you're a vampire and you are immortal, it kind of gives like a built-in explanation as to why your health regenerates.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Like you can take damage from like bullets and shit, but your health will automatically regenerate. But it's other things that other attacks that are
one thing that was a little silly to me is he got into a combat scenario and somebody shot him and he didn't die and they were like, he's a vampire! Like, people don't always immediately die from a gunshot.
I'll also say that it doesn't look like you can necessarily talk your way through this game because he had to feed to level up to handle a combat situation.
Correct.
Didn't look like it was a situation he could talk his way through. So, I mean... it might not be like a Vampire the Masquerade sort of game where, you know, you could play the vampire race that's like really good at like convincing people or, you know, persuasive and stuff. So I don't know. It seems like it has potential. Obviously, the systems that what they claim are controlling sort of the world and the economy and the
that seems politics to be a you know, I knew a little bit about Vampire, but I didn't realize how big of an impact that actually takes, or at least what they're claiming it takes in this world. And if it works out well, I'll be pretty impressed.
Yeah, if they know that stuff, this game might actually be pretty cool. If some of that stuff falters, I think it's gonna.
All right, I only have one other game that I saw today. So, what?
I got a couple more games. Real right. quickly, I want to go over some. Star Child was something that we had seen during the PlayStation press conference. It was the game that we were assuming looked like Bit Trip Runner.
Yeah.
It was a VR side-scrolling kind of platforming game. And so I got to play that in VR. I was really impressed. Like, just the high quality of the game. Like, the guy was telling me when I was playing it, and these are actually from the guys who did Has-Been Heroes.
Yeah.
Brad. They were
That's the Trine developer.
Yeah. I can't remember. But anyway, we met them and talked to them at PAX South this year. Nobi was one of the developers of the game. And so he was like, sit down on this couch, you know, put on this PlayStation VR headset. And I start playing, and he's like, get closer. You know, get closer into the world. And I kind of move forward. And he's like, no, closer. And I move forward. He's like, closer. And I'm like fucking like falling off the couch almost. But I'm getting like...
Well, this is VR, right?
Yeah, VR.
Your head is in his crotch.
Yeah, yeah. no, so he was sitting next to me on the couch. You know, it's, you know, like I said, it's a side-scrolling game, but you can move fucking like all the way into the world. And it is so detailed. Like, I'm like just like... awed at how detailed they got. And he's like, you know, move up, move down, look around, you know, look left where you've been, look right where you can go. And it's really impressive. Now, the one thing is, this game is fairly early on. It's got a long way to go. But it's just really cool how you can kind of just, you know, you just look around in the world. And so there are some, you know, light puzzle elements to the game where I was kind of moving this drone thing around to connect some strings. I think just kind of like, once again, early on tech demo-y stuff. Got farther, kind of met the antagonist, this giant like alien creature. I think the concept of the game is that the main character is a galaxy explorer. She kind of flies around the galaxy, finds new planets, lands on them, checks them out. And so towards the end of the demo I was playing, I got attacked by this creature, and then all of a sudden this giant like robot shows up and like puts his hand down and he's like, get the fuck out of here, and then he picks you up and like looks at you and whatever, and that's kind of the end of the demo. The game has a long way to go, but just like the quality of it is fucking like just like on point. I was very impressed. And kind of like, you know, when we had played Moss the other day, it's that style. It's a you know, it's a game that doesn't need to be played in VR. You could technically play it not in VR, but it adds such a nice element to it.
Who's the developer again?
I forget the name.
Frozen Byte. It is,
that's I'll double check to be sure that they haven't, like, you know, I don't know, switched or something. But it's at least the actual developer, the man, not the game company, was the one that worked on Has-Been Heroes.
Well, did you get a chance to play?
Yes, I did.
The Artful Escape?
That wasn't one of the... I wanted to briefly, because I was talking about VR, talk about The Inpatient. Because I played the demo for The Inpatient.
Motherfucker. Tried to make an appointment for that shit. Stupid fucking Sony app.
Yep.
Sony has magical ways about it.
Sure, we'll go with that. Magical ways. So I played Impatient. This is the game that is in the same universe as Until Dawn.
Until Dawn.
It actually takes place in, I believe, the 1950s.
I think it's like 60 years before.
Like 1950s makes sense.
I'm surprised they didn't include the words Until Dawn.
So it has nothing to do with that. No, and that's why. Is because, and that's one of the things I talked to the PR lady about. They want this to, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with Until Dawn. It's just, it happens to be in the same universe, but it's completely separate.
Then why even mention it?
They didn't. It's just called The Inpatient.
But they had to mention it somewhere. Somewhere along the line, someone had to say, yeah, by the way, this is in the same universe as Until Dawn.
What makes this part of the Until Dawn?
It's the sanitarium where it takes place has this, is the same name as the sanitarium that's referenced by a character in Until Dawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go to the sanitarium.
Yeah, actually go to the sanitarium in Until Dawn.
So anyway, I played the game. It's a very rough demo. I mean, you start with, you know, you're strapped in a chair. I guess one of the cool things about it is how you choose dialogue options. You can look left or right and you choose, and you know, it just says like, you know, text, but then it'll say like stressed or confident or whatever, and it's kind of, you kind of can choose how you want, yeah, the tone of what it is. And they were telling me that when the game comes out, eventually it's going to hook up to voice, so you can even just physically say like, oh, confident, I feel confident, I feel stressed, I feel, you know, whatever. And it will choose that dialogue option. And so, you know, it was, you know, doctor talking to me, and then there's like a flashback to like how I got into this position. And every time it flashes back, like, I'm like, I look down and I'm wearing a stethoscope and like a doctor's robes. And I'm like, was I a doctor? Or was I trying to be disguised as a doctor? You can't really tell. And then you get taken back to your room, and then you kind of just move around in your room a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're walking down a hallway, and there's a couple of jump spook scares, and then the demo ends. Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
It was a fairly basic demo. I don't know what Chai to
has
say.
A question.
The decision butterflies are back, too.
Oh, yeah. So the butterfly effect is back in this game, similar to Until Dawn. At certain times when you make a certain decision, you'll see the butterflies.
A bit heavy.
A little bit. Letting you know that you've just now made a decision that, you know, affects.
Influencing the story.
Exactly.
I played some Crackdown 3. It's Crackdown. It reminded me of the first Crackdown, though. I spent most of the time just getting agility orbs.
Have Echo.
It was fun. I'll probably play this, but it's really, really seemed like Crackdown.
More so than Crackdown 2 did?
I mean, yeah.
Which is good, because Crackdown 2 was kind of a fucking mess.
It was a mess.
Nobody liked Crackdown 2. Crackdown 1 was great. For what it did, the things that it did really well, people liked, so I'm glad they're kind of returning to the...
And there's no destruction in the single player, so you're just playing...
As I mentioned yesterday.
You're just playing Crackdown.
There will be destruction in the multiplayer mode.
Which they still haven't shown.
But okay, it's fine.
It comes out in 5 months.
Who cares, though? You only need agility orbs. Who cares about that stuff? I would sacrifice all the destructibility in the world if it means I can fucking focus solely on agility orbs.
I agree with that. What else we got?
I still only have one game, so I'm gonna save it. It's literally the last thing I was.
Chris Davis, you have not spoken in a while, and I know you played a couple of big ones.
I played Mario Odyssey today.
Oh yeah, how do you feel about Mario Odyssey?
So I did the Sand Kingdom. It's called the Sand Kingdom.
The Mexican place. Whatever.
Okay, the Sand Kingdom demo that was available.
The Day of the Dead place.
That's it's all right. Sugar skulls. I guess I just don't like the Joy-Cons at all.
God, you're crazy.
Sorry. Maybe because my hands are, you know, normal-sized for people.
Sorry, what? Let me see your hand. I mean, don't hold my hand. I don't... The same fucking size as my hands, okay? And my hand is perfectly fine.
But, yeah, I had a little bit of trouble controlling Mario. Basically,
I'm sorry.
The layout of the controls for the Joy-Cons kind of suck, in my opinion. And I had trouble with the camera, trouble with movement, you know, finite movement, without just running at a breakneck speed.
I felt the exact opposite when I played this game. I thought it controlled very well.
I like it. I think the level of presentation is very nice. The possessions are right. I didn't really get a hang of the twirling hat thing you could do.
You could throw it in a circle around you and wipe out a bunch of enemies. Instead
I never
just...
did that.
Yeah, you could do that. It's some kind of combination of shaking both Joy-Cons.
Wait, you didn't throw
you
your
do
hat?
This.
Oh, I threw like the hat. I just
that's
didn't,
it.
I didn't
really?
Do that
yes.
motion control.
Oh, the twirl.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. I wish some of my complaints still stand. I don't really have a gauge of progression, you know, based on how the moon system works. You know, I wish I knew how that was helping me out and what my limits were and things like that. I got into the pyramid. I think it's it's a fun Mario game. It's a pretty good Mario game.
You're goddamn right. It's a fun Mario game.
I think it looks pretty good. I look forward to playing it. I look forward to playing it on a pro controller like a normal fucking human being and not fucking Joy-Cons.
Hey. Never mind. Let's move on.
How was Wolfenstein?
So, Nolan, being the god among men when it comes to actually getting appointments for us, at 4:30 today got me the last slot to play Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus.
Wolfenstein.
And holy crap, that game is going to be a lot of fun. It's more Wolfenstein. It takes place 5 months after The New Order. And level I played was the first level of the game.
Which one came first? New Order or The New Blood?
The Old Blood.
Old Blood.
Chronologically speaking, The Old Blood is a prequel to The New Order.
Okay. Gotcha.
Set in 1946. So, it's 5 months after the events of The New Order. The timeline feature carries over to the new game.
Timeline feature?
CLC characters from the timeline you chose in The New Order reappear, continuing on the story. Basically, the level
tell us about
out.
Blowing legs off of Nazis.
So the entire level is BJ in a wheelchair, wheeling around a submarine and blowing away Nazis.
Wait, he's in a wheelchair the entire mission?
The entire mission, you are in a wheelchair, just blowing the shit out of Nazis.
All right, that's pretty cool.
Can I ask you a question?
It's actually really fun. Blowing
if he's in Nazis. A wheelchair, how does he reach down to pick up ammo?
So here's the thing.
Oh, please,
they
God.
They removed it.
Really?
You can now walk over objects to pick them
roll
up.
Roll over objects.
Fucking Luya.
Now, there are objects that you may not be able to quite
how
reach
Brad's
and you just press
himself.
X to pick up.
What?
But when they're out of reach, when you can't actually walk over them.
Can they patch that into the first game?
No, unfortunately. The only other major change to the game, really, is that they kind of reworked the health regen system. To where it doesn't, you don't automatically regen to segments of 20 health. You kind of just slowly regen your health over time, very slowly though. And you're just as weak and vulnerable as you typically were in all of the New Order. It was a fun 20 minutes of going around the submarine, wheeling around in a wheelchair, going down conveyor belts, and kind of sneaking around just. Murdering the fuck out of them.
Is there anything movement wise that communicates to the player that when you're moving you're in a wheelchair? Are you doing like these motions where you're
yes.
moving?
You will put down your gun
in your
and
lap.
You see his arms move the wheelchair back and forth.
There we go.
And it controls like a wheelchair, so it's kind of sticks as you're turning and you're trying to maneuver and things like that. It's great. It was really smartly done.
Cool.
And it ends on a reappearance of one of the main baddies from the first game, Frau Bluebear. Black Collar Frau Bluebear.
Oh yeah.
The lady Nazi.
The very ugly now lady Nazi and her very.
Didn't you fuck her up in the first game?
Yes.
What happened to her?
Her face got fucked up and she swore revenge on you.
All right. Cool.
And she's been hunting you for 5 years.
Well, I didn't really expect her to be dead by the end of this game.
It's very much a continuation of the order. It's very fucking good. I am very, very excited.
I am going to stick to my guns here and say, I am very excited. I fully intend to play this game, and I'm sure I will enjoy the hell out of it.
There's a scene mid level in which you're just talking to one of the previous characters, and the entire time they've set traps throughout the sub. They're microwave traps, so when an enemy walks through them, they just explode into this puddle of goo and send you. And as they're having this conversation, the entire time the camera is making certain to frame the window outside the room, and you constantly keep seeing Nazi just run to the trap and explode. And it's just, it's like comedic timing. It was so funny.
They were pretty good at that in the first game, too. I am going to stick to my guns here and say that I am a little tiny bit disappointed that this new Wolfenstein game isn't just like kind of a new reboot or a new fresh take on Wolfenstein.
Wait, what?
No.
I'm kind of bummed this is a direct sequel to, like, for me, Wolfenstein has been 2009 Wolfenstein already? And then the New Order, Wolfenstein. Like, those were two completely fresh takes on Wolfenstein. I like them as, like, standalone. Like, I was expecting something to be totally redone and, like, reimagined.
See, now...
I don't like... Like, people in chat are like, Dana says Nick hates sequels. I don't. I love sequels. But, like, to me, so far, Wolfenstein has seemed very much like an iterative, like, every single entry has been kind of a new thing.
So you're wanting to get rid of that really well-done writing that was in Wolfenstein?
No. Who says you can't do another version of Wolfenstein and also have good writing?
But they would have to throw away all these characters and start anew.
Sure. Sure.
I don't want that. I want them to continue building on these.
Hey.
And considering that this is going to happen, the game takes place in the United States, and we get to explore what happened 15 years after the Nazis won.
Hey, don't get me wrong. You don't forget
room.
Which is a fresh and interesting story that nobody's ever tried to tackle.
Of course,
before.
Yes. But it's a fucking video game.
I have. Okay.
Every alternative history author in the world has once uttered, "What if the Nazis had won World War II?"
Yeah. I did open this argument by saying I fully intend to play this game and I'm sure I will enjoy the hell out of it. But I was just saying, with all this like teasing stuff and like the new Colossus thing, I was fully expecting this to be kind of just like a fresh thing, like a new thing.
I think that is the absolute wrong.
Well, that's okay.
Well, we can agree to disagree.
Let's talk about something else.
They rebooted this franchise three fucking times.
That's true.
Okay?
And you know what? I liked all three of those reboots.
You liked Return to Castle Wolfenstein?
Oh, wait. I didn't play Return to Castle. I'm sorry.
Why are we still talking about that?
Okay, we can move on.
I'm sorry, Nolan. I still want to...
Return's good.
I wanted to talk about it.
It's all
right. I really liked 2009 Wolfenstein.
It was good for its time.
Let's talk about the next game, which, again, I still have one game to talk about. I'm going to save that till later because it's literally the last thing I played. Is there anything else? Anybody else?
I want to talk about the last game I played.
Well, it's the same thing the last game I played. Brad, what do you have? Anything else?
Nah. I can't say sorry. I did play one more game, The Artful Escape.
I played that too.
Brad played it. It is artful.
You got a guitar?
Yeah, you do. Literally, so the demo is fairly simple. You're literally just running from left to right. You can triple jump, and on the third jump, if you hold down A... he'll just start jamming out. Or if you double,
you can do all kinds of control
mashing and stuff. Yeah, you can just start shredding on your guitar. And there's a whole lot of just nothing, just kind of some nice music. You meet there is like some weird lady in your mind that talks to you. I'm really confused as to what was going on there. It seems like you're now a time lord or time and space lord with your guitar.
It's got a really good vibe.
No,
though,
it does.
Man.
And then you come across this creature. And you start, strumming your guitar, and then it turns into a Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where it starts making a noise, and you mimic it, and you keep going back and forth, and all of a sudden you start like jamming out together, and it fucking just goes so well.
It's cool.
It's really cool.
The game is like barely a game.
Oh no,
like,
it's barely a game right
but
now.
But like it's like
I don't think you can die in this.
It's
game.
It's got a good vibe, and I like the dialogue when it's like asking you like what music means to you, and you're like getting all like metaphysical and shit and man, it's good.
It's a hipster game.
It's like a very fucking hipster
game. Yeah, and then so you run a little farther and you come across this giant fucking like I don't even know what it is, like space jellyfish, whatever. And then you talk for a while and then you just start like snowboarding on light.
Okay, this sounds like you should be doing drugs when you're playing this.
Oh, totally. And
I need a visual reference for this game.
There was a trailer at the
Microsoft conference. Yeah.
Well, I need to see it again. You should be doing drugs all the time, man.
But yeah, The Artful Escape, it's pretty cool.
All right.
And I have one more game to talk about.
What is that?
It's the same game. Noel and I have one appointment at the end of the day.
Yep.
We literally got their last appointment to see Ashen. Microsoft's Ashen.
It's developed by Aurora 44.
Aurora 44.
Based out of New Zealand.
Yes. Maybe Nolan could describe it better than I could.
Sure, it's an open-world, third-person action game with passive multiplayer.
The people don't have faces again!
And I say passive multiplayer because it's similar to Journey, in which the players you encounter in the world, you don't necessarily choose them, they just happen. You can play this game offline, and those people you encounter will become just NPCs, because there are certain scenarios where you need multiple people to progress the game, some puzzles. But it's literally, you know, it's kind of similar to a Souls game. You're running around a world. The weird thing is this world is a world without a sun.
Yeah.
There's no sun. There's just this giant rock floating way above you in the sky.
Like a moon?
Kind of. Not that like not a, that
it
look, high.
It looks like an asteroid floating in the in the atmosphere.
Think of Age of Ultron when the city is being lifted up into the sky. Kind of like that. It's only like maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 miles up.
Like a Katamari.
Yeah, sure, why not? And so the thing is this this like structure, this rock is shedding ash. And the ash gives off a slight glow.
It's like luminescent.
Luminescent ash. And that is how the light is existent in this world. So, you know, you run around this world. You can encounter these NPC vagrants, which are kind of these just passive creatures that are just trying to survive on their own. But if you get a little too close to them or, you know, antagonize them, combat will ensue.
Sounds like that. Yeah, I'm not going to make that
you
joke.
Come across rivers, ponds, lakes, which you can drink from, which will give you a temporary stamina boost. Because unlike a Souls game, the more you use your stamina, like your max stamina will slowly kind of decrease a little bit. The more kind of like fatigued you are. There's loot drops in this game when you kill enemies and certain creatures. One of the really weird things about this game is there aren't like weapons. Like weapons in the traditional sense, like in a Dark Souls game, you'll get a sword, and then later on you'll get a sword that's, you know, +3 or +4, slightly more powerful. You know, this sword does 30 damage, and you'll get one that does 35 damage, and then one that does 50 damage. That's not how this game works. How this game works is you find a sword, use a sword. You find another sword, it's gonna be the same. You find an axe, it might be a little bit different. Like the weapons aren't meant to be different in terms of strength. They are different in terms of style and how you use it. So it's more about finding a weapon style you like, and that's the weapon style you can use. If you like swords better, if you like axes, if you like, you know, lances, whatever, you'll find weapons in the game and you just kind of go with those. And you will have the ability later on to upgrade them to make them more powerful, but you know, it's not so much about like random loot drops.
What did you think about it, Nick?
I liked it. I got this impression when they were talking about it and they were explaining all the way this game works, that this is going to sound negative and it's not meant to be, but like nothing that they really described sounded like something I hadn't, like nothing, they were explaining a lot of things that I felt like didn't really need to be explained. It was more just like, I feel like a lot of games kind of work this way.
Yeah, lately. I mean, one of the new things
is you can explore paths and find secrets, and there are things. Oh, and if you're playing cooperatively, you can lead the other player to these secrets.
So I will say I agree with you. Yeah. I don't think it was until we got to the Q&A session and I started asking a lot of questions that they started answering with some things that makes the game sound a little more interesting. I will say that we did see a boss fight that was a Dark Souls-esque boss fight.
Yeah, the boss fight seemed kind of cool. Because it also was not like you. It was one of those games where you walk into a room and instead of giving you a cutscene, it was like you just kind of trigger something and it jumps out and suddenly you're in a boss fight.
But some of the stuff he was talking about was the fact that in this world, there's going to be a hub town that will start off fairly small. But the more random NPCs you meet, if you stick with them long enough and maybe if you defeat a boss with them, that NPC will become a permanent resident in your world and they will go back to your hometown and start building the area.
I was hoping they would show more of that, because sounds like something that unusual.
I haven't seen something like that before.
Yeah.
And he was saying like you can meet NPCs that maybe will craft potions, or maybe one that becomes a kind of a blacksmith. And the more people you interact with, you know, that town will start to grow and start to become more populated.
Sounds like Dark Cloud or Suikoden.
Kind of.
I mean, not like literally.
Yeah.
It's what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
I would like to ask a question about this.
What's up?
being the asshole that I am, I have to ask of every Souls game,
mm-hmm.
how is this game handling story and lore?
You son of a bitch.
So there is a story and there is some lore. They would not get into it.
Okay.
He did, like, when he was in the cave, he was seeing, like, shadows of, like, spirits or whatever that were stuck in this place that were doing things, and he said they were kind of... they wanted all of the environments that you explore to be kind of, to feel like they were kind of... like they had a history and they had things
okay.
tied to them, but they, beyond that, they didn't really go into more detail.
I think they were okay. called Ash Echoes.
I mean,
they were like past memories of people. They're, I wouldn't think of them as like bloodstains. It didn't seem like there was people who had played the game and died. It was more of a just they kind of put some people there. I will say that this is a seamless open world.
Yeah,
you said the entire game is very large. There are a few kind of loading areas, but they are hidden in like, oh, if you sometimes when you enter a cave, it will load the next area. But there's no like breaks in the game. It's all seamless.
I mean, you want to talk about lore? I feel like the world itself has that. You can kind of tell that, like they're like they've created this world, but there's this giant rock that produces ash. I'm sure there is a reason for that, and I'm pretty sure it's probably going to be.
Probably.
Part of the story, so there is going to be lore, for sure.
Definitely.
This is a world without a sun. There's got to be a reason for that, and you're probably going to want to find out the reason for that.
And that's all I played at
E3. That is it!
Did we want to talk about our best of show?
Oh, shit,
yeah,
real quick!
Yeah.
I do want to preface this by saying that as soon as we get back from LA, we're going to start production on a series of short videos that are going to just kind of highlight our favorite games of the show. I think we're each going to do 4 games each. And we're just going to kind of pick and choose the games that were announced, that were shown, that we saw, that really impressed us, that had us the most excited. So we're going to kind of boil down our excitement into 20 short videos. Should be cool, but we all had we handed out our booth awards today. We each got to pick a game to give one out to. And I figured we can go ahead and just say what we gave
ours.
Well,
yeah, but let's not go into the reasons why.
No,
let's save
no,
that
no.
for the video.
Yeah, those will go in the videos. I gave my award to the... I keep wanting to say The Amazing Spider-Man. It's just called Spider-Man. I gave it to Insomniac's Spider-Man.
Was it amazing?
I mean, I... Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Fucking amazing.
Was it spectacular?
Was it superior?
Is there really a superior Spider-Man?
Yes,
was
but
it ultimate?
There's a whole story.
No. I gave mine to Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Dragon Ball FighterZ?
With a Z.
Or is it FighterZ? I like Dragon Ball FighterZ as a
fighters.
Title.
They stressed that it's FighterZ.
They did stress that it was FighterZ, but I personally will always and forever call it Dragon Ball FighterZ.
FighterZ.
Yeah,
you're officially wrong.
It sounds better to me as well. No,
there's Z Warriors.
Who did you give your award to?
My best of show went to State of Decay 2.
Yeah.
Super pumped for that game.
Crispy?
My best in show went to Fortnite.
Nice.
Last minute one. Hey, Chris Davis, who did you give your award to?
The answer is obvious. Ace Combat 7.
Was that obvious?
Good night, everybody. Good night. Anyways, yeah, so as soon as we get back to LA, we're leaving first thing tomorrow morning, so after we get settled back and kind of rejuvenated, we'll begin production on these top 20 videos. So look for those. We'll have them on the site at 4playernetwork.com. We'll probably air them on our Twitch channel as well. So yeah, look for those. That should be fun. But yeah, also big shout out thanks to everyone who came out. We had our community meetup tonight after the show floor closed. It was awesome. We don't usually have huge turnouts, or not. I wouldn't say this was huge. We don't usually have a big turnout for E3, but we had a pretty.
We don't usually have such a quality turnout.
Yeah, we had a pretty quality turnout. We had a lot of fun. In fact, we meant to leave at 8. We actually left at 9.
We left at ten.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
We were having too much fun.
We were having a lot of fun. It was great to talk to everybody, to meet some new people. And it just kind of reminds, you know, it reminds me why we do this thing. So it was great. It was worth the time spent. So thank you guys so much for coming out and hanging out with us tonight. I already posted the picture from the meetup on our Twitter page, twitter.com/4playerpodcast.
Tweeters.
Anyways, that's it. That's a wrap on E3 2017.
Woo!
Keep your eyes peeled for our top 20 games of the show. We got to get to bed so we can get up early and get back to Texas. Thank you so much for joining us this week. It's been fun. Thank you, Chai Tai, for putting us up. As always, you've been wonderful. And we look forward to doing this again. Hey, look, it's Korn. Korn.
Korn.
He said he was a lurker. He's actually
Henry.
Said something.
Korn.
Korn.
He just really likes Korn.
It's not different at all, is it, Steve?
Anyway. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. 4playernetwork.com is the website. We will catch you guys later. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.